This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at Burrow.com/ACAST. That's Burrow.com/ACAST. Burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello and welcome to The Parenthood. Taking some time off work when you have a baby is an accepted inevitability in life nowadays. But when you have more children and realise that the needs of your children are so acute, many women choose to take a longer career break. The harsh reality is, though, that our children don't need us for long. It seems like in no time at all, they march out into the world on their own, independent, confident, carelessly shaking themselves out of our arms. And it's at this time that often women find themselves considering a return to work. But as many of you listening know, returning to the workplace is easier said than done. Many women feel that they've lost their skills, their confidence, their relevance. But the idea that parents have no value in the workplace is something that I fundamentally disagree with. I'm a passionate believer that the gargantuan task of raising children equips women for the workplace in a way that no college or university can. And these women are a rich but underused resource that the workplace is often missing out on. So with me today, I've got someone who shares the same view as me. Dominie Moss is a former headhunter who, after having children herself and observing the challenges that women face returning to work after a career break, founded the Return Hub, a search firm that focuses on recruiting professionals who want to return to work after a break. Dominie, thank you so much for coming and joining me today on The Parenthood.
That's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I'd never really thought, well, I hadn't really ever heard about the term a career gap. I mean, you hear about sort of gap years and people taking, you know, gaps off to do something. But actually a career gap really sort of identifies well that break that women often find themselves having.
Absolutely, yes. Well, there are thousands, many thousands of women who've had established careers, maybe 10, 15, 20 year careers, and then found themselves stepping off their career path for a while, taking some time out for all sorts of different reasons, but very often to fulfill caring responsibilities. And then when the time comes to go back, find it somewhat challenging. I set the business up really after a somewhat chance meeting I had with a fantastic woman who worked at one of the American investment banks. And she was very involved with their return to work program, what they called a returnship. And I was fascinated by this idea of a sort of a low risk structure, I suppose, for the employer to bring someone back into work after a break, but an opportunity to give those women as well some CV worthy experience. And I had lots of questions for her. And when I said to her, you know, how many applications do you get for your program and how many places do you have? She said, well, we have 400 applications for 20 places. And I nearly fell off my chair. I couldn't believe it. I thought, who are all these people trying to get back to work?
That's amazing that many people are that keen and with so few places available. Do you think there are more places available now? I mean, how long ago was this?
This was nearly 3 years ago. And the concept of a sort of return to work program has grown considerably since then. I think there are about 70 companies now that run their own return to work program. But I think increasingly, most of what we do now at the Return Hub is putting people back into sort of business as usual roles. And, you know, we find that there are huge numbers of, you know, very kind of desk ready people who are trying to get back to work and don't really need the sort of the structure of a special program.
It's tough to go back after a work. I mean, I was interviewing Holly Branson on this podcast a few months ago, and she was saying how when she returned to work at Virgin, you know, her family company, she found that return intimidating herself. And it really struck me that if sort of the daughter of the founder felt like this with her surname as it is, what must it be like for everyone else in that position?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. I think, you know, lots of people always ask me about our candidates and women who've been on a career break having a loss of confidence. And I think, you know, that can very easily happen. I mean, I know myself when I was on maternity leave with both of my children, and I was off for about, I think, 7 months with the first and slightly longer with the second. And even that really short time out of the workplace, you know, you sort of start to think, gosh, you know, can I still do my job? And, you know, will everything have moved on? And will they remember me? And all these things. But the reality is, and we know this as well from the women who've gone back to work on, you know, some of the programs and the women that we work with, that really regaining that confidence takes a matter of weeks. You know, it comes back very quickly. Once you get back to work, you look around and you think, gosh, I'm just as capable as I ever was. I'm just as smart as all these people I'm working with. And actually, I've come back to work with a renewed energy and maturity and fresh perspective. You know, there's huge amounts of development and skills and experience that people gain when they're on a career break. And, you know, that very often is a huge benefit to business.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously that return to work, if you're then coming back into an environment that's quite supportive, that's going to be a bit easier, you know. And obviously the more quickly women regain their confidence, the better. Mm. But you're right, in terms of the added skills, I mean, God, I found becoming a mother really, really hard. I had never been able to survive on so little sleep. You know, when it comes to negotiating with a child that doesn't want to put their boots on, even though it's snowing outside, you know, requires skills that were way more, you know, tenacious than I'd ever had to kind of use it in the workplace. And I did feel that I was a much more capable person. And certainly looking at me, like, efficiency. You know, if you're a mother and you've got an hour to do something, you will get it done in an hour. Whereas prior to that, I might have taken a day to do that because, you know, time is less of a luxury. I think, I mean, we all know parents are ruthlessly efficient because they have no choice.
They have to be, yes.
And so I'm sure that, you know, those skills are definitely transferable and really should be sort of celebrated. God, if we can all be more efficient, then the workplace is the one, you know, that's really benefiting the employer. Yeah.
Well, I think that definitely translates into the workplace. And, you know, I think if you make the decision to go back to work, A, you want to make sure that being at work really counts for something. But B, you know, you want to get your stuff done so that you can get out of there and be home and, you know, if at all possible, be back in time for bedtime or bath time or, you know, to help with homework or whatever it is. So, I mean, absolutely, I think you do become ruthlessly efficient. And I think we had one of our very first clients, actually a wonderful investment consultant, actually in the pensions industry. When they first embarked on sort of working with us, one of the first people that they hired undertook a study of their employees to work out what was going on from a sort of culture and sort of, I suppose, what was happening during those working hours, because they had a lot of sort of perhaps younger employees who tended to sort of stay very late and, you know, work long hours and, you know, perhaps would be finishing at sort of, you know, 9 or 10 o'clock having ordered in pizza. And that seemed to be a sort of, you know, somewhat celebrated or sort of admired thing. And anyway, they undertook this piece of work that ended up with the CEO at the end of it saying, look, what we understand now is that there actually is potentially a problem if you're not being able to get your work done in a reasonable time. You know, is it that you're not being efficient? You know, or is it that we've given you too much work and we need to hire somebody else? So really kind of reversing that attitude of a sort of, you know, work late culture into one where actually maybe the person that's getting their stuff done and able to leave by 5:30 is actually doing a better job, which, you know, it was really interesting, I thought.
We've explained how sometimes, you know, employees feel that they're on the back foot if they've had a career gap. Do you think that there is a negativity perceived around having a career gap from the sort of employer's point of view? Do you think employers look at people who've not worked for 2, 3, 4, 5 years and think, well, they're going to be less appropriate a candidate than the person that's come straight off a next last job?
I think that's right. I think there can be a reluctance from hiring managers to hire somebody with a career gap. And I think that has been sort of embedded over, you know, decades of just being told that if you're looking at a CV and there's a gap on it, there must be some kind of a problem. And really that sort of thinking hasn't caught up with where we are now in this moment in time where we have, you know, more women than ever who've gone through university, who've perhaps got a place on a graduate program and then had a career for maybe sort of 10, 15, 20 years, taken a step off And, you know, attitudes haven't moved on. There's still an assumption that, you know, well, there must be a problem. You know, have you not been able to get a job? Well, actually, I haven't been looking for a job. I've been, you know, very busy, you know, bringing up my family.
Yeah. I've had the hardest job there is. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yes, exactly. I've had the hardest job there is, kind of unpaid. And but yeah, so I think there is definitely a perception that if you have a gap on your CV, that is a problem. And, you know, that's why we talk a lot to businesses about the benefits of hiring from this pool of returners and, you know, what are the business drivers and, you know, frankly, busting some of the myths that abound around these kind of, you know, these women.
Mm. And I mean, change is afoot in the world. You know, we live in the era of sort of Me Too, of an increased understanding of what is appropriate and inappropriate, especially, you know, when you're looking at sort of gender politics and stereotypes. Do you think change is afoot in the workplace around this perception of a career break being negative, or do you think we've still got a long way to go?
Gosh, that's a good question. I mean, it's quite hard to generalize. I think that, you know, the fact that there are now kind of 70 companies in the UK that are running return to work programs is a sign that things are changing and that things are moving on. Clearly, in the grand scheme of things, that is still a very, very tiny number. But, you know, more and more we hear in the media and the press, you know, about the value that women can add to the workforce, the benefits that women returning to work will add to the economy. You know, I think they call it the sort of, I've heard the expression, the gender dividend. So
is it changing? Slowly, slowly changing.
Sometimes it feels that the pace of change is somewhat glacial, but yeah. I think, I mean, the things are definitely speeding up and you know, people are listening. I think the very first sort of diversity event that I went to in the city was about 15 years ago. And I think that, you know, companies have spent absolute fortunes in that time trying to move the needle, to increase the participation of women in their workforce. And they've done that through very various different initiatives, whether it's, you know, maternity coaching, whether it's establishing women's networks, whether it's things like, you know, unconscious bias training or redesigning job descriptions to appeal to a more kind of female audience. You know, all of these things, you know, are great. And I'm sure that a lot of the people that have been on the receiving end of some of those things, such as the sort of women's networks and coaching programs, have benefited hugely from them. But, the sad reality is that the needle really has barely moved. And I think really where we're sort of starting to see the pace of change really speed up is because of things like the gender pay gap legislation that requires all companies with 250 or more employees to report on their gender pay gap. And particularly in the city, things like the Women in Finance Charter, which is a Treasury-backed charter that asks all firms in the financial services sector to sign up to it, and in so doing to set targets to achieve a greater gender balance. There are now 300 companies in the city that have signed this charter. You know, the maths of that mean that, you know, they can't all hire from each other if they're going to get to where they say they want to be. They have to be looking at new pools of talent. And, you know, frankly, there's a huge pool of amazing women out there who do want to return to work. And, you know, the existing kind of recruitment industry, if you like, you know, for them isn't really fit for purpose. You know, it doesn't do the job of connecting them with employers. And I guess that's really where we come in. But yes, I think, you know, change is definitely happening.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
And obviously what you do is very, very important. We're going to talk about that in a bit. But I think the other key is the sort of initiative from women about having the confidence to say, I do want to return to work and I've got to think about where I start. And I think it'd be really interesting to talk about that, to talk a bit more about, you know, what how positive a career gap can actually be. You know, we are conditioned to think, oh, you're out of the market for 2 years. You've not had your finger on the ball. You've, you know, you've been loafing around at home in your tracky bums with your baby. But actually, like I said, I think these women are incredibly resourceful. So it'd be really interesting to sort of go through and see, you know, what qualities would you expect to see in a mother who has had a career gap? And actually, you know, very often women who are taking a bit of time off, you know, might not be looking after babies. It might be looking after, you know, a relative who needs care.
Yeah.
But that is an incredibly selfless thing. We know that, I mean, one of the things that I found tough about being a mother, and one of the things I always talk about on the bump class about why mother parenthood is particularly difficult, is that you can't, someone said to me, you know, is looking after a baby a full-time job? I was like, no, it's like two full-time jobs, because you never get a weekend, you never get a, you know, clocking off hours, you never leave the office. Whether or not you're with your baby, you're still so emotionally tied to your child, and that is the most intense job you'll ever have. You're more committed to that job than anything else you ever will have. And I think returning then to a work environment, you know, you have so much power to make a real difference. You know, I going back to the sort of whole sleep thing, I remember, you know, when before I had children, I'd sort of have a bit of a restless night's sleep or a sort of late night, and I think, oh, I can't get to work today, or I'm not going to be very efficient at work because I only had sort of 5 hours sleep. You realize when you've had children that even if you've had half an hour's sleep, you can still function because you've got no choice. And I think that for me was a really important lesson, that I'm a lot stronger and more resilient than I had sort of anticipated. And it's not often until you push yourself that you realize that.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I think the other really great quality that you get is perspective on life and what's important and what you want to spend your time on and what not to spend your time on. And it makes you kind of ruthlessly efficient. But yeah, I think, I mean, you're absolutely right. You know, resilience, patience,
I mean, the
negotiation
patience
skills.
And that, I remember, you know, negotiating. Oh, I was negotiating with children today. They have to go and see the dentist. And I said, you know, guys, this isn't, if I asked you a question about whether you'd like to go to the dentist, it was a rhetorical question because you're going to the dentist. And of course, they invent loads of stories and then they bring in the emotion. Oh, mommy, don't let me go. They even bring you in the, I just don't want to miss school. I'm like, I don't want you to miss school either, but you will thank me for this. And you have to,
making those hard decisions on their behalf.
I mean, anyone who's had a tough boss or a tough client to deal with, nothing compares to having a child that doesn't want to do something.
No,
there's
absolutely.
Also the thanklessness. You know, you're doing a job for which you are not appreciated whatsoever when you're a parent. You know, no child goes, Mommy, thanks so much for ensuring that I brushed my teeth, you know, the last 2 years and don't have to have fillings. I know I was difficult, but I really appreciate the time and patience you put into that.
Yes, but that is, persistence, I think. If I can think how many times I have to say, go and clean your teeth every morning. I mean, goodness me, I might as well just put it, press play on the record and...
And you know, even I get jobs are tough. I get people can be difficult when you're in a professional space. But nothing is ever quite as difficult as the sort of unrelenting, you know.
Yes.
They're almost like little mini dictators who you're in love with. It's like you've got Stockholm syndrome with a dictator. Yeah.
Yes. So it's influencing skills then, isn't it, that we can hone as parents is... Yes. How do we persuade someone to do something that they don't really want to do?
Yeah. And God, you know, no business school teaches you that.
Yes. Absolutely. Exactly.
But so I think, you know, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, you know, am I still qualified? What you will have gained from a career gap are a huge amount of skills that you didn't have before. And you know, that tenacity that life only teaches you when you're so invested as a parent.
Yeah, we actually did some research very recently for the Women and Work All Party Parliamentary Group, and we surveyed a large number of our candidates, and what we found is that 4 out of 5 women surveyed agreed that taking time out has taught them valuable transferable skills, including increased emotional intelligence, and I think 55% management skills. And over half, I think it was 54%, considered themselves better people managers through experiences gained during their time out. But despite this, 7 out of 10 felt time away dented their confidence, which a significant number, about a quarter, believed to be a key barrier to returning to work.
Yeah, so that does make... And maybe it's around our language. I mean, you sort of mentioned the word, you know, being a better people manager. And that's actually the perfect description of being a parent. Yes. You're a people manager. You're your children manager. I mean, it teaches you these skills that, you know, you're going to use in the workplace that aren't half as testing as in the workplace.
Absolutely. And I think it's also important to be realistic about the competitive nature of the job market. And, you know, I think if you are thinking about going back to work, it's really about trying to remember and really sort of thinking about, you know, what are those skills that you have learnt. And for many of the women that we work with, whilst they've been, you know, busy raising children or looking after an elderly parent or you know, whatever it might be, they very often have been gaining new skills in things like entrepreneurship, or they've been perhaps doing some further study. Or one of the first women that we placed, actually, she'd been off doing Operation Riley. She'd been off building a water sanitation plant in Nepal, managing a team, you know, getting all of these great sort of project management skills. And so, you know, it's a bit like sort of when you're at school and you're thinking, you know, how do I make my CV stand out from everyone else's? And, you know, you're thinking about, you know, like my grade 6 piano, or, you know, was I sort of captain of a hockey team, or, you know, was I sort of, you know, Duke of Edinburgh Award, or, you know, whatever it might be. And in a way, it's sort of quite similar when you're thinking about returning to work. It's thinking about, you know, what have I done during my break that is going to put me head and shoulders above everyone else, that's going to get me that job interview. And it is important to really to remember that it is still a competitive job market out there.
I mean, obviously, a lot of people returning to work after a career gap have some restrictions, and these are kind of definitely perceived as negatives, like, you know, potentially wanting to be able to have flexibility in their work environment, maybe wanting to work some days from home. How difficult is that to negotiate, and how open-minded are employers, you know, to the idea of employing people that are really skilled but do need a degree of flexibility? Because I genuinely think flexibility isn't a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a pro-employee and anti-employer. I think it can work brilliantly for both parties.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, we're seeing more and more of that. And obviously with the increased technological advances, you know, it's increasingly easier to enable working from home or agile working. I do sometimes think that flexible working can be sort of labelled as a, you know, as a mother thing or as a sort of women's thing, which can be a bit dangerous because, you know, fundamentally, I think most people, you know, nowadays do want a degree of flexibility in order to live a kind of, you know, live and work a balanced life. And, you know, we collect a lot of data on candidates when they register with us in terms of their skills and experience and background and how, you know, how long they've been out. And one of the questions we asked them is, do you want to work full-time, part-time or project work? And we were surprised initially when we saw this, about 73%, and it stays fairly consistent, tick the full-time box when they register. Now, that doesn't mean that they might want some degree of flexibility over a full-time working schedule. But I do think employers are, you know, more and more aware that if they want to attract the best talent, they have to be able to offer some kind of flexibility. And there, you know, in reality, there are very few roles that it's absolutely impossible to do so. I mean, in the city, there are obviously some regulated roles, you know, particularly trading roles or some even client facing roles where, you know, it's very difficult to do that role out of the office. But the vast majority, I think, there is a degree of flexibility that can be built into a role.
And flexibility, I mean, God, as an employer, I would want flexibility to be key because it works in the employer's interest as well. You know, there are some days that you just have to work really hard all day long and stay a little bit longer. And you just need that flexibility from that point of view as well.
Yeah. I think the important thing is when you're talking to employers about needs for flexibility in a working arrangement, it's really, really important to be solution focused. So no hiring manager ever wants to hear that someone wants to join them and they have a kind of very rigid requirements and it's going to be a problem for them to manage along with the rest of their team. I think what they really want to hear is, look, you know, I need to have this kind of flexibility in my week. I need to do, you know, whether it's drop off once a week or pick up once a week or one day a week from home, whatever it is. But they want it to be presented with a solution. So this is how it's going to work for you and this is why it's not going to be a problem. And thinking about that, I think, is going to be really helpful if you are in that situation where you're trying to negotiate a flexible working arrangement.
You know, the idea that potentially the negatives you might be presenting, you can turn them into positives.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm hoping that slowly we're inspiring women that might have been a little bit worried about returning to work, that it is potentially an option. If you do want to start that sort of thought process and the process of going back to work, how do you start? Where do you start if you've had sort of 5-10 years off? What do you start with?
Yeah, so I would always start with the research. So think about, you know, A, what do you want to do? And, you know, is it that you want to go back to your old industry, or do you have skills that are very transferable into doing something slightly different? And one of the best places to start your research is obviously Google, but also tapping into your old network. So you'd be amazed, I think, at how many people that perhaps were your old colleagues or old clients or people that were in your professional network who will be only too happy to hear from you. And who knows, may even not be aware that you want to go back to work. And once they know that you're keen, might say, well, gosh, you know, come and have a chat with us. So definitely, you know, ask people to have a coffee with you. And it's not about saying, oh, gosh, it's all a bit awkward because I'm going to go and, you know, call my old colleague and they're going to think that I want a job. It's about saying, I'm just starting on that journey back to work. I'm trying to find out what my options are. I'd love to come and have a chat. Can I buy you a cup of coffee? And just find out what's going on in my industry. You know, what's keeping people awake at night? What are the key themes? And then alongside that, you know, let social media be your guide. Find out who on Twitter to follow. So for example, you know, what journalists are writing about your industry, you know, who are the sort of thought leaders within your world? It can be a very efficient way to sort of kind of curate a kind of library of information or sort of key, you know, key writers on a particular topic or industry. And I think once you've done that, that will help inform some of the decision making that you'll need to do further down the road.
Obviously, and maybe also inspire you. You know, yes, the more information you know about something, the more passionate you get about it. And I think you know, very often if you haven't worked, you're a bit isolated and you think, well, my information is redundant. And then you think, oh, I'm reminded why I wanted to get into it in the first place. Yeah. It's a really cool industry and look how it's moved on. And actually, I've got new ideas that I could contribute. It's that inspiration almost.
Absolutely, exactly right. And I think there is also obviously the sort of practical aspect of what does your CV look like and making sure that's up to speed. We actually have lots of tools on the Return Hub website to help with CV writing.
Because that's changed. You know, if you haven't been in the workplace for 10 years, you know, you probably are going to need to revisit that and spend quite a lot of time doing that, aren't you?
Absolutely, definitely. I mean, that is your marketing document and that is your opportunity to make a good first impression. And, you know, you'd be amazed at how little time actually recruiters or hiring managers often spend on a CV. You know, they want to see those kind of keywords that match the skills that they're looking for kind of pop out within about 5 seconds. And so, you know, that's really important to get right. And LinkedIn profile as well, you know, pretty much most recruiters will receive a CV. And if it looks sufficiently interesting, then go and check you out on LinkedIn. Key bit of advice there is make sure you have a professional photograph.
What, just not something pulled from your iPhone, not a selfie with your
not
dog.
A holiday snap that sort of, you know, you've cut someone else off next to you and it's sort of, you know,
bikini shorts.
Yeah, definitely.
well it depends what job you're going for.
yeah, ideally not the bikini shot.
And that doesn't need to cost loads of money.
No, goodness me, no. I mean, iPhones are so amazing these days. You know, you just need to get someone to take it for you on a phone.
Yeah, but dressed appropriately with a sort of appropriate background.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. With a looking professional.
Yeah, so LinkedIn, I mean, I'm not on LinkedIn, but that is, again, you know, that's pretty easy to get involved with. And that will presumably also build your community in terms of re-engaging with, you know, the important people within your work sphere.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a incredibly popular professional network. And I would say that, you know, most recruiters will certainly most recruiters or headhunters will use LinkedIn as part of their professional toolkit to, you know, just to look for, to screen, to sort of know more about potential candidates. So, you know, LinkedIn really is really important. And actually, we run lots of webinars on how to do your LinkedIn profile and how to do your CV. So you can always look at our website to sort of find out more about that.
You know, I presume that today it is easier for us to kind of do a bit more research online about, you know, there's so many instant articles that you can download. And if you convert that to 10, 15 years ago, there's so much more that's accessible online. There's so many more ideas. And it may be that you sort of go back to what was your original job and think, actually, there's a branch of that that I find particularly interesting. Maybe I'm going to change that slightly. And that gives you then the opportunity to sort of go down that route and meet people, you know, around that kind of idea. And I mean, one thing we sort of did mention is the sort of recruitment industry. What you're doing is quite disruptive within that industry, sort of specifically sourcing women who have had, or people who've had a career gap. Is this a sort of slow change, or is are people open to the idea of you know, these skills?
So the recruitment industry, you know, I've obviously been in the recruitment industry for about 17 years now. And when it comes to people who've had a career break, it's, you know, it's fundamentally not really fit for purpose. And the reasons for that are many, really. But if I think about, you know, how executive search works, so that's the sort of the headhunters, you know, who are operating at a relatively sort of mid and senior level, you know, they're great at finding people who are already in a role. And that's what they get paid to do. They get paid to know a sector incredibly well, in great depth. And that's really, that's what they do. And then you've got the sort of recruitment agencies at the sort of slightly lower salary bracket level, at sort of more volume end of the recruitment industry. And they very often are in a competitive process with a potential client who might have asked sort of three or four recruitment agencies to help fill a role. And so for them, it's really about, you know, who's the closest fit to the job spec? Who looks like the least risky candidate? You know, who's the most obvious fit? And how quickly can I get them in front of the client? So really, for anyone who is a little bit sort of outside of that, who perhaps has a, you know, let's call it a non-linear CV, you know, they're just not going to get a look in. And then you've got the jobs boards, and there are many, many, many jobs boards out there. And, you know, even sort of, you know, pretty senior roles now advertised online. And these jobs boards have what's called an ATS, or an algorithm, if you like, that matches the CVs that are sent through to the job description. Now, these online jobs boards very often, you know, you might have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of applications for one particular role. They need to be filtered down into a kind of manageable a number, so that a human being can then sort of, you know, sift through the best 5 or 10. And, you know, those algorithms will kick you out very often if you've got a CV gap, very often even if you've got a sort of slightly strange formatting to your CV, a table or something like this. And so, you know, these are all the reasons why, you know, the sort of the recruitment industry isn't really built for you if you've had a career gap. And the knock-on effect of that is, if you don't realize that's what's happening, you can begin to think that perhaps it's you. And that again can kind of really go into sort of denting your confidence. And, you know, it's not you, it's the system.
So keep trying.
Yeah, definitely.
Dominie, do you think it's ever too late to return to work?
It is never too late to return to work. I do get asked this sometimes when we have candidates who register with us who perhaps have had, you know, quite a long career breaks, you know, maybe 10, 15, 20 years. The first person that we placed two or three years ago now had actually been out nearly 15 years, and she had 3 children. And while she'd had a great city career prior to her break, she'd had 3 children. And while she'd been out, she'd launched an art consulting business that she'd run from home, but basically advising ultra high net worth individuals about art and art as an asset class, and helping them with shipping and tax and insurance and all this sort of thing. And she'd come to us because her youngest had gone off to school and she wanted to relaunch her city career. And we introduced her to a fantastic client of ours that was in the same industry that she was in before. And they were absolutely thrilled to have been introduced to her. She started with them. She retook her exams within the first month, passed, is back working full time and absolutely loving it and relishing every moment of being able to kind of relaunch her career. So I really honestly believe it's not about how long you've been out. It's about other things. You know, a successful return to work is about, you know, your attitude, your determination, being able to articulate your value add, what is it that you can add to an employer, you know, understanding what skills you've gained and, you know, why is that relevant to a potential employer?
And, you know, that added maturity. I look at my 20-year-old self and I compare it to my 40-year-old self. And I'm definitely an easier person to deal with. There are fewer issues. And I think especially in the sort of, you know, the vibe of a workplace, that can actually really, really help. I wanted to talk a little bit about why it's great to go back to work. I mean, obviously, there's many reasons that people choose to go back to work after a career break. And sometimes there is no choice. Sometimes there's, you know, they've got to go for financial reasons.
Yeah. Yes.
But there also are sometimes situations, presumably this lady you were just talking about, I just want this to be a part of my life because I know it's going to be rewarding.
Yeah. So when we ask many of our candidates, you know, what do you want to do? So often I hear them say, I want to do interesting and challenging work and I want to be part of a team again. And I think the sort of most important bit of that is being part of a team again. And it sort of makes me smile because I occasionally get approached by a potential employer who calls me up and says, you know, Dominie, I think you might be able to help me. We've got this great job and it's working from home. And I always have to say to them, I'm so sorry, my candidates have been at home. They want to get out of the home. And, you know, they want to leave the front door as their professional self and go back and, you know, and do work that is going to be interesting and challenging, but part of a team. And I think that is one of the, you know, the most appealing aspects of going back to work is feeling that you're part of something. Something
else. Valued and and you know that people come to you because they value your thought and advice and thinking on a certain matter.
Yeah.
And I think you just don't have that. I definitely had a sort of loss of confidence after I had Ludo. And I remember going to a dinner party once and I was sitting next to this fascinating man who was in politics, but he had, you know, he'd raised loads of money for charity and he'd climbed mountains. And I just thought, and he said, so what do you tell me about you? And I just said, but it's just so boring compared to you, because I go to play groups and I take my children to baby swimming and I feed them and then I clear up all the mess that they've made. And that is the sort of roundabout of my day. And I felt like I was such a boring person. I felt I needed to get back into the workplace to give myself a bit of what I had been. And I'm not saying that all women should feel like that. Actually, I think that, you know, you being a mother, it should be a sort of value, but you often don't feel very valued. And you don't, like you said, you don't feel part of a team and you don't feel like you've got any area of expertise.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, being a mother can sometimes be so lonely. And, you know, am I allowed to say quite boring sometimes?
Oh, God, so boring. That's why we started podcasts, because you can listen to things at least that's not sort of daytime TV that make your life just a little bit, you know, thought-provoking. And listen, there's always that sacrifice. You know, I think as a working parent, you will always have that time that you leave your children and you think, I shouldn't be leaving my kids. You know, they're ill or they need me. You know, children come home from school and sometimes they've got something big going on and you think, I would do anything not to have to leave you now. But I do. And I think it's also a great, you're being a great role model going back to work. You know, mummy has to go to work because actually I really enjoy work. Like I love being with you.
Yeah.
But I also really enjoy being a part that is a big part of me.
Yeah.
And so it's about like everything in life. It's about, you know, sacrifice and working out what sort of sacrifice is. But generally, I mean, I like I said, I love my work. I love, you know, the way it stimulates me and the way the person it has made me. But it's not always perfect. I think it's very difficult to ever get that perfect balance. But by and large, I feel the balance I have, you know, the benefits I get from being away and working outweigh, you know, the sacrifices I have to make in the times that I wish I didn't have to.
And I think, you know, one's children are only little for a period of time. My mother always says to me, your children are only borrowed. And I think that's very true. You know, there will come a time, obviously, when they are, you know, they're going to fly the nest. And
the easier you make that for them, the better it is. There's some research that I was reading the other day saying that parents who encourage their children to leave, that encourage their children to do their first holiday on their own, spend their first Christmas away from their family and don't make them feel guilty about it, are the children that in the longer term are much closer to their families. And it's the families who clutch onto them and say, oh, but please don't leave me alone. And of course, we've got to spend the summer together. They're the ones that eventually become more distant. And that's, I mean, I'm dreading that. I'm dreading the time when my children are like, actually, I've got a better invitation this Easter. I don't want to be with you. But I know I'm going to have to do some sort of deep breathing and possibly jump into work a little bit more to find something that, you know, to fill that void that is as rewarding as being a mother.
Yeah. Well, I think there's always a compromise to be made in life. And I sometimes think when thinking about going back to work and, you know, what kind of role you want, and it's a bit like the London house market, you know, whatever, seemingly whatever your budget is, you have to make a compromise. You know, it's, you know, is it the kind of the box room or the smaller garden or the not the ideal location? And it's sort of a bit the same with work. You know, it's, you know, is it the right working week? You know, is it full time? Is it the right boss? Is it the right company culture? Is it the, you know, all of these things that kind of go into the mix? And in the end of the day, you just have to figure out which bits you're willing to compromise on and which bits you're not.
And presumably, if you accept a job that is sort of imperfect, but you go in and you do a really good job and you charm the pants off them. Well, not actually chumming the pants, but you know, an appropriate. You chum them. You presumably are in a stronger position to negotiate if they have started really relying on you and value, realizing your value, than sort of having not worked for them before. You know, accepting a job is not, that's the job it's going to be forever. There is always, you know, room for potential compromise once that started, presumably.
I think that's so true. And when you're thinking about going back to work and you get that job, you know, you're not signing up for life in blood. You know, you're going to give it a go. And of course, everyone wants it to work out and for it to be successful.
But its success could lie in that 2 years' time you move on to something else that, you know, and the door has been opened by your current job.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think we're certainly moving into a time when people spend less time in jobs as it is. And, you know, we hear a lot about portfolio careers. And, you know, I think it's one of the big issues for sort of certainly large employers is how do they retain their sort of, you know, their graduate employees beyond sort of, you know, 2 to 3 years? Because this is a generation of people that all want to come into work. And, you know, got their eye sort of when they start on what they're going to do next, which is, you know, quite different, I think, from, you know, certainly my generation, where, you know, you thought, you know, I'm going to go into a career as a, you know, fill in the blank, you know, banker, journalist, spaceman, you know, whatever it might be.
In terms of payment, do you have to take a pay cut after a career gap?
That is a great question. Again, really difficult to generalize because it depends what you're going to do. So, for example, we have, you know, candidates that we work with who might have had a, you know, very successful career as an investment banker. They don't necessarily want to go back and be an investment banker and be on a plane 3 times a week. They've got these great skills which are eminently transferable into something else. But the reality is, you know, they're just probably not going to get paid the same as they did as an investment banker.
But if you are going into the same job, if you think, right, I am going to do that, whatever it is, job again, should you go in thinking, I'm probably not going to be paid as much at the beginning, but there's no reason why I can't sort of accelerate that? Or is it something you can really fight for?
I think it really varies, but it's definitely something to try and fight for. I think the better thing to think about is, am I being paid fairly in line with my peers who are coming in? You know, I'm coming into a role and how do I benchmark myself against them? And that's really important, because when you go back into a, you know, particular kind of corporate career in a kind of large organization, the level that you go in at is the level that you'll be in for probably quite a while. And whilst it might be tempting to sort of think, I'll go in at a bit of a lower level because that's my safety zone and I'll perhaps accept a little bit more money, the reality is, for the majority of people, you will regain that confidence really quickly, start to look around and think, hang on a minute, you know, I'm just as good as all these other people. I'm just as capable as I ever was. And I'm being paid, you know, X percent less than I should be. And that can start to kind of really niggle.
Yeah.
You know, aim to go back in at an appropriate level with the right pay, benchmarked against your peers, and ensure that that organization is kind of teeing you up for success in the role.
Yeah. And what about, you know, the whole part-time thing? I see so often friends of mine, they return to work, but they only want to work 4 days a week. So they basically are paid 20% less because they're taking one day off. But the job is essentially a full-time job. They're just being super efficient and they're not on Facebook and, you know, going out for sort of long coffee breaks. They're, you know, they're properly getting it done because they want to get home. And that's so unfair.
It is so unfair. You're so right. It's such a good question, because I think I tend to think that a 4-day-a-week job is basically doing a 5-day-a-week job in four. And, you know, very often on that fifth day, you're kind of juggling phone calls, answering emails, kind of doing what needs to be done. And, you know, you do begin to get a bit resentful, thinking, I'm being paid 20% less than everyone else and I'm kind of doing the same job. But at the same time, you know, you probably do want to kind of think, I've got to kind of go and do all these things on a, you know, let's say it's a Friday that I don't want to do on a Saturday because I'm with the children. But, you know, I need to go and do the Sainsbury's shop or whatever it might be. And also not feel bad about that. So I do sometimes think actually a kind of 4.5-day week is quite a good compromise in terms of pay, and suggesting that half a day from home on the fifth day, or even, you know, going into the office for half a day is a good compromise.
But, you know, a job is a job. And if you get the job done, surely it shouldn't matter whether or not you're at your desk, you know, for that final half a day. And we all know that as a parent, you get stuff done.
Yeah.
God, you know, the amount of stuff I get, you know, while I'm sitting on the loo sometimes, just because that is my 3 minutes to be like, okay, I can do an Ocado shop in 3 minutes. Yeah. But it was if I had all the time in the world, I wouldn't sit down with a cup of tea and I'd take my time. And I just feel that women are sort of penalized, and should women be going into the workplace going, I will do your job, give me some flexibility, let me work from home one day a week, and then they choose if they've got their job done, if they have done all the stuff that they have done, then they can go and do what they want. Because quite frankly, a lot of people that don't have children, you know, they come into the office really hungover and they're really inefficient that day, or they're flirting over the water machine, whatever it is. You know, we all know that having been in an office environment without that time pressure, there is a lot of time to do sort of other stuff. Yeah. I mean, some weeks vary and some jobs vary, but at the same time, surely we should be looking at the job being a job done rather than how long it's taken you to do it.
Yeah, we do see this very often. It is the compromise that I think a lot of women think it's the payoff that they're willing to take. And I think it's just really important to kind of make sure that your employer isn't taking advantage of you in that respect.
And you don't feel like you're being taken advantage of.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
Yeah, I suppose it's about contentment too. And if you feel as a woman you're being taken for a ride because of your gender, because of your career gap, because of your circumstances, and whether that's in terms of pay, in terms of respect, in terms of flexibility, you've got to say something, don't you? You can't just sit there being resentful and being, you know, breeding unhappiness. You've just got to, you know, make an appointment, address it properly, be honest about it, and presumably present a solution.
Yeah, absolutely. Be solution focused, definitely. Yeah. Make sure the employer knows what's in it for them.
Sell yourself like you're, if you're in sales, you need to be the sort of one item that you're selling. Dominie, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been so interesting and hopefully really inspiring for people listening to this. Do have a look at the Return Hub. It's thereturnhub.com. You're also, where else can people find you?
We're also on social media, so do follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
And does your website, it's a great resource for people who are sort of initially thinking whether or not you can actually, you know, you can place them is another thing. But there's also lots of sort of support in terms of creating your CV, the LinkedIn you were saying.
Yes. Yeah. We run free webinars on how to do your CV, how to do your LinkedIn profile, interview skills. There's lots of inspiring case studies of women that we've placed back into work. Also things like our CV writer tool and lots of inspiring stories.
And if there are employers listening to this thinking, oh my gosh, yes, of course, people who've had a career gap are the perfect recruits for my business, do they get in touch with you as well over the website?
Absolutely, yes, please. You can find all our contact details on the website.
Perfect. Well, thank you. And thank you all for listening to another episode of The Parenthood. If you haven't already, don't forget to subscribe, rate and review us. It does make it easier for people to find us. From our listening figures, you're all doing a tremendous job already. So for that, I thank you. You can also follow me on Instagram. I'm at marina.fogel, where you can suggest other topics for our next chat. But in the meantime, from Dominie and me, thanks for listening and goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.